Move to case number three, Snow versus Pfister. Ms. Thompson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. This case is not as complicated as the procedural history would suggest. The evidence against appellant Jamie Snow that was presented at trial was really two categories. And the first was a series of people who were eager to come to court to tell the jury that Jamie Snow had confessed to them at various times over about an 8-year period. And those witnesses were allowed to testify without the defense having a meaningful opportunity to cross-examine them, because the best evidence that would otherwise have been available to the defense had been withheld. And that was evidence that these witnesses had been incentivized or had a personal interest in the outcome or personal interest in participating in the case, either because they had been offered deals, because they were seeking deals, because they had been pressured or cajoled or otherwise encouraged to give the testimony that they gave. There's eyewitness aspects to this case, but it's not really an eyewitness case, and that seems to be what the respondent himself argues in the response, that Danny Martinez was already pretty well impeached at trial, so he's not the basis for this conviction either. What Mr. Snow has identified in his habeas petition and in the two post-conviction petitions that he litigated through the Illinois courts are numerous pieces of classic Brady evidence, critical impeachment, and numerous ways that his counsel was ineffective. The state's case was already a difficult one at trial because it was built on incredible people. And that's an important point for this court to consider, because the main issue in Mr. Snow's appeal here is prejudice. You know, there is evidence that was clearly withheld, and there are things that his counsel clearly didn't do. So the issue then becomes, would this have made a difference? Has Mr. Snow presented evidence that is sufficient to undermine our confidence in the outcome? And could the Illinois courts have reasonably concluded that it didn't? Taken alone or taken cumulatively, and the cumulativeness issue is an important one for Mr. Snow in this appeal, there is no way that the Illinois courts could have reasonably concluded that this evidence would not have made a difference.
Well, why not? The withheld Brady evidence pertained only to some of the, 12 witnesses that testified about confessions?
There are 13 people who
13, okay.
There's 13 people, Your Honor, who in one way or another claimed that Mr. Snow had made inculpatory statements to them. And it's true that the appeal before this court focuses on 4 of those people. But it's not true that the other 9 were just, you know, got up there, said, Jamie Snow confessed to me, and that's the end of the story. That's all there is. That's not true. These people were impeached with other evidence already at trial, and there's other evidence in the record that were there to be a retrial would affect the impact of that testimony.
Right, but it's certainly reasonable for the state courts to conclude that the sheer volume of the confession evidence, based on the number of witnesses that he spilled his guts to over the course of this multiple-year period between the crime and his apprehension, plus his flight, his concealment, his false name, there's abundant evidence of consciousness of guilt here. And that's what the case was built on. You're right, it's not an eyewitness case. The eyewitness testimony isn't very good.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. Volume doesn't really mean anything in this case. And the reason why is, you know, these are people who are giving various versions. I mean, they're not all saying the same thing for starters, and they're giving various versions of an incredible story. And as evidence starts to come out that there have been deals that have been withheld, it raises a question about the credibility of everyone. The circumstantial evidence also isn't that good either, and we explained in our reply why that's the case. You know, Mr. Snow was not a great guy, and so if the circumstantial evidence is going to be that he didn't want to participate in an investigation into the case in which he was ultimately convicted of obstruction, or this case, that he, you know, had this prior criminal conviction, that is not strong evidence of consciousness of guilt. And the other thing about these supposed confession witnesses, when you start looking at them one by one, this is just a lot of smoke. This is not, you know, people who are giving credible testimony about credible situations in which Mr. Snow supposedly confessed to them. This is people who, as the new evidence shows, were writing to the state in the early 90s, you know, 6 years before Mr. Snow was arrested, saying, I'd love to help you on this case. You know, what do you need from me? This isn't people who are saying, this has been, you know, hurting my heart all these years. I just need to tell you that Jamie Snow confessed to me. These are people who are eager to come forward. And once a couple of these people have these problems with their testimony, that they are looking for deals, that they had been threatened and cajoled, as Mr. Scheel told investigators on two different occasions, it raises a question about the course of this entire investigation. This is not a case where, hey, you can take away three of the witnesses, but there's all these other people that are left to support the conviction. It is not that case at all. The other thing that's important to take into account is the posture in which this court is considering.
How many eyewitnesses were there?
Well, we submit there were none. But as far as testimony goes, you know, Mr. Martinez obviously gave the testimony he gave, and
Luna?
Carlos Luna did not identify Mr. Snow at trial. What he did do was say, I'm 200 feet away across the street, you know, I see someone come out. He does view a lineup and he says Mr. Snow looked most like the person he saw come out, but he doesn't make an ID. And as we presented, there's evidence, even from a new memo from the state's attorney's office, that they that an investigator went up to Mr. Luna's window, looked out that window the next day, and they were themselves incredulous that he had any possibility of making any ID. I think the eyewitness that's left, actually, Your Honor, is Gerardo Gutierrez. And Gerardo Gutierrez identified, he said that he was in the convenience store earlier that night, and the person that he describes is a person that clearly doesn't match Jamie Snow. That's a person who's got this chin scar. That is not Jamie. He didn't identify Jamie Snow as the person that he saw. So it's not an eyewitness case at all. It also raises, again, questions. Why is Danny Martinez testifying and saying that Mr. Snow is the person he saw when he doesn't say that for years, and he appears to make that identification shortly before trial when he's, you know, meeting again with authorities? This raises questions about all of the people.
Right, but he's impeached on all of that, that his ID is based on extraneous stuff, not the lineup, because he couldn't identify anybody at the lineup, right? He saw your client's picture in the paper.
What defense counsel does do at trial is focus on the length of time that it took him to make an ID, and he does point out that there was a lineup where he wasn't able to identify Mr. Snow, and Mr. Martinez has the explanation of the lighting wasn't good. What defense counsel doesn't get to present is that when Mr. Martinez looked at mug books the night or the day after this happened, he's seeing Mr. Snow's picture in those mug books, and he's not picking him out. He's actually picking out other people. He's saying there's two people this looked like. And one of the people that he picks out in those mug books is actually the same person that Gerardo Gutierrez picked out in the mug books when he looked at them. We don't have full information on that, as we've explained throughout our briefs, because this is information we've primarily gotten through FOIA. We haven't even had any opportunity for an evidentiary hearing or discovery at any level of this case. So there's holes, but they're not Mr. Snow's fault. He's done his best to try to fill them in. And the other thing about Danny Martinez that he never got to present is this issue about Jeff Pilo. And when you read Jeff Pilo's trial testimony carefully, it's clear that the prosecutor's view of Pilo is, I'm going to argue that he was distracted by running this plate. You know, that's what the prosecution's trying to get him to say, and going through all this, well, how long were you doing that? You were fighting with the dispatcher on the phone. When the defense counsel gets up to cross-examine Mr. Pilo, he tries to ask him, well, you had a good view of the door, and Pilo gives sort of a wishy-washy answer about that. But what we know from Mr. Pilo's interview before the trial, which was not used in his cross-examination, and what we now know from his affidavit, is he's saying, of course I was looking at that door. You know, I'm there because the silent alarm is pulled, and I am trying to figure out what's going on in there. And definitely nobody came out. It's the difference between Martinez being sort of a mistaken guy or a clueless guy and being a liar. And Pilo says this guy is a liar. So why is somebody claiming that they saw Jamie Snow come out of the gas station when they're not mistaken that it was somebody else, not Jamie, but they are actually lying about that? That is a significant difference from the case that the jury heard at trial. I want to go back to the point of prejudice, because again, I think that's what this case is really about, and ask and go through some of the other reasons why this case would be different if it was retried. And we've talked about the Martinez points as well, and there's even more impeachment of Martinez, which is also critical, and there wasn't a sniff of it that was presented at the original trial, and that's that he knew Mr. Snow from growing up. There's multiple people who presented affidavits saying this wasn't, he's trying to pick out somebody, you know, just based on the description or what he's recalling, but this is somebody that he actually knew. He told people, you know, it wasn't Jamie, that's not who I saw. There's the polygrapher reports where there's notes in the polygraph report where he's telling somebody at least some point prior to July of 1994, which is when that polygraph report is from, that Jamie Snow was not who he saw. And there's obviously the Paul Williams testimony, which although Mr. Williams testified, that aspect of what he saw was never addressed. We've talked about Carlos Luna, and to answer the court's question, he's not an eyewitness, and what this jury didn't hear is he could not even give the composite sketch artist enough information about the person he saw to make a composite sketch. And that is a significant difference from saying, you know, I sort of got a view of this person, I'm looking at a lineup, I'm able to say this looks most like the person I saw. And when you're sitting, you know, you're sitting in front of a composite sketch artist, and you're not even able to do enough for that person to make a sketch when that's their job. That is also significant evidence that's different. And we've talked as well about the Brady evidence and the differences that would be there. If the court doesn't have other questions at this time, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Okay. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Assistant Attorney General Brian McLeish on behalf of the respondent. So, as petitioner noted, this was not an eyewitness identification case. In fact, the state led with that, didn't lead with that in opening argument, but it stated in oral argument, mark these words, this is not an eyewitness identification case. And the reason for that is because Martinez's identification was not very good. Everyone knew that at trial, everyone knew that on direct appeal, everyone knew that on post-conviction appeal. It's been the same throughout, despite petitioner's argument that just a little bit more impeachment of Martinez would have made the difference in this case. It wouldn't have. He was amply impeached. Trial counsel testified at a post-trial hearing that, in his experience, when you've hammered a witness enough, eventually you risk making a mistake and opening up a new can of worms here, and that's what could have happened here. And so not only was there no prejudice for not further impeaching Martinez, but it wasn't deficient performance either. And so I think petitioner's strategy then is to try to cast this cloud over the entire proceedings by saying, you know, we've got these Brady evidence, but even the Brady evidence isn't what it seems. So, for instance, Shaw testified at trial that he knew that the federal sentencing judge was informed about his likely cooperation in this case. The only thing he testified was that he wasn't sure whether the judge took that into consideration. That's the only difference between what was presented to the jury and what was available, publicly available, in the federal docket. And so that is the case. Then we also have, it's not clear that this evidence was withheld. There's allegations that this evidence was withheld, and some of that has to be taken as true. For instance, the Shield stuff, because the state courts took it as true. But not all of it. And we also have several confessions that are not tainted by any Brady evidence. We have Jody Winkler's confession in Florida. We have Bill Gaddis, who is a preacher. He witnessed someone say, you know, they were all at a party, they were all downtrodden. And he said, what's going on here? They said, you know, Jamie shot the boy in the Clark station. And petitioner didn't say anything to that. We have Ed Hammond's confession in prison, which was corroborated by the detail that Snow told him he knocked something over on the way out. And on the record on page 1939, we know that there was a stool knocked over by the victim's body. We have petitioner trying to give information about the murder to officers Thomas and Bernardini on the way back from St. Louis, or on the way back from Missouri. We have the fact that he fled to Missouri within a month of the crime and was hiding in an attic for 6 hours, then refused to participate in a lineup, threatened to fire his attorney, and was emotionally distraught because he wouldn't participate in this lineup. The only reason he participated is because they threatened to force him to, and then he lied about that at trial. And getting to petitioner's trial testimony a little bit more, even some of these so-called recantations they still contradict petitioner's trial testimonies. So Palumbo, for example, said, you know, first there was the boom, boom, I shot the kid. That was shortly after the crime. He said petitioner told him that. And then petitioner gave him another more detailed confession later. And Palumbo's recantation is, well, I knew he was kidding about that, which is on its face implausible. But it also contradicts petitioner's trial testimony, which was, I didn't say the boom, boom thing. And second, I never met him. I never saw him that second time. So none of that happened. So these recantations aren't as helpful as they seem either. Going back to the evidence against him, we have Daunton Roberts testified that Snow said these drawings were of him and asked people to remove them. Now, she partially recanted that and said, actually, he didn't ask me to take them down. I took them down because I was his friend, which is not particularly exculpatory if she thought these drawings looked like him, as petitioner had otherwise testified that they looked like him. And one more point regarding prejudice. Petitioner reasonably says, you know, we really need all of this. You know, this is a cumulative error claim. We have to rely on the cumulative prejudice. But because most of his Brady claims are defaulted in one way or another, he can't rely on the cumulative prejudice. He has to show cause and prejudice for each individual claim. And that's the McLeese case that we cite in our brief and that the district court relied on. So because of the ample evidence against petitioner that is not tainted by the Brady allegations or the Strickland allegations, and because he has to show cause and prejudice individually, and because these recantations, some of them at least, are not what they seem, and many of them are not, you know, much of the trial testimony is not tainted by the recantations, we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. You have 4 minutes.
Thank you. I mean, respondent tells you that what the appellant here is trying to do is to cast a cloud. That sort of gives this idea that all we're doing here is sort of saying, well, there's some stuff and you should think about it, but that's not what this case is about at all. And that is not what prejudice for purposes.
It looks like it.
Well, that's not what prejudice for purposes of either Strickland or Brady requires, Your Honor. It is evidence that's sufficient to undermine the outcome. And that is very clearly, under the case law, not more likely than not. It's not a question of, I think it's likely this guy would still be convicted. The question is, can you still have confidence in this verdict after all of the evidence that we now know was withheld and after the evidence that we now know creates problems, significant problems, with all of this eyewitness testimony?
Except we're here under 2254D. Our review is highly deferential.
That's right. And the question is, could the state court have reasonably concluded that this evidence was not sufficient to undermine the outcome? That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And a reasonable court could not have concluded that.
That's hard to say when 9 of the 13 confession witnesses remain untainted.
Well, again, Your Honor, they do not remain untainted. That's absolutely incorrect. And let's go through them right now. Ed Palumbo, he has this affidavit where he says, I was trying to get a deal. And his, you know, testimony in the first place is basically when they're stopped in traffic, Jamie's like, hey, I killed that guy. Boom, boom. You know, that testimony was already incredible. And he says and admits, I was looking for a deal. Steve Scheel, we've talked about, and it sounds like the respondent concedes that there's some issues at least there. He's recanting and saying, people came to Missouri and pressured me until I, you know, gave up and agreed to do what the state wanted. Bruce Rowland, there's significant amounts of impeachment of Bruce Rowland. His wife is saying he told her I lied and I'm trying to, and not only did he try to get a deal, but he actually got an impossible sentence on his DUIs, his pending DUIs, in exchange for testifying in this case. And that's something that was never presented at trial. Bill Moffitt, he told this witness, Dennis Hendricks, that he got a time cut in exchange for testifying. Kevin Shaw got a deal in Florida.
Did the jury hear all this?
No. I mean, these are the things the jury didn't hear. And I'm telling this court, if this case were retried, there would be evidence about each and every one of these 13 people that would cause a jury to say, I question that. I don't believe it. And more importantly, why is the state calling 13 people, all of which have significant problems with their testimony, to claim that Jamie Snow confessed? And why is the state putting on Danny Martinez, who it sounds like we all agree is not telling the truth, is a liar, is contradicted by the responding police officer? Why is that their case? Why is that their case in lieu of, you know, evidence, actual evidence that Jamie Snow did this? And you're telling me there's circumstantial evidence? You're telling me he's not a great guy? We'd not convict people on the basis of being a usual suspects person, and that is what this case boils down to when this court considers all of the new evidence. This is not a verdict that in the first place was a, you know, easy case. It wasn't a, you know, case where there's no question Mr. Snow did it, and it's definitely not that case now. It's a question that everyone should ask themselves, you know, how can we have confidence in a verdict where we know that the state was cutting deals, pressuring people, and not bothering to tell the defense that? And that's something the jury would have questions about too. You know, why is this the way the state has to make the case against this person in the absence of actual evidence that Mr. Snow did it? And to go back one more time on the Brady point, you know, the state says, well, you know, if you don't get them all, then you haven't won. Again, that's not the standard for undermining confidence. But second of all, as we've argued in our briefs, the jury would have a reason to question all of these witnesses in light of evidence that, clear evidence that some of them were specifically incentivized by these deals. And it would cause them to question the impeachment evidence that Mr. Snow either had for each and every one of these witnesses or that he now has in light of the evidence that's been discovered about them since that time. I want to end with this. Mr. Snow is not asking this court for a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, he's not asking to walk home today. He's not even asking for a new trial right now. He's asking for an opportunity to present his claims. He has never had an evidentiary hearing. He didn't get one at the district court. The state court, you know, never held an evidentiary hearing on these issues, so that's why the court now has the record it's had. You know, he chose a jury trial because he wanted a jury to hear all the evidence and to make a decision about his innocence or his guilt. And all he's asking this court to do is to remand this case for an evidentiary hearing so he can be fully heard on all of the evidence that he's presented, which does undermine confidence in the outcome of his conviction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and we move to the